Good evening, tent people. Or good afternoon, whichever you prefer. I'm happy to be joined with Stephen Mogin. And Drew Emmett. So this can be about mandolins, it can be about John Hartford. We'll play some, we'll answer your questions. We're just going to have a big time for an hour. Thank you. That's all the notes we know. Or Drew already played all the notes I know. Well, it's a great day to get to be here. Wow, it was, I guess we all know, 15 years ago today, we lost John Hartford. And, but it was, for me, 45 years ago, I was in a band, the Bluegrass Alliance, and we were invited to play at the Bean Blossom Bill Monroe's Festival. And we were, you know, we were kind of, we were totally the new kids on the block, and it was interesting to see how we would be received trying to do, you know, hippie kind of bluegrass. And but we were way out hippied, thankfully, because the John Hartford Aerial Blame Band was here. and it was really something. I was just talking about it a while ago that the night they played, when they did the John's tune back in the good old days, Vassar would do this fiddle solo at the end. He did that on the record too, but Vassar would do this fiddle solo that was just, and that night it was approaching 5 minutes, just him solo by himself. I got a little chill bump right now thinking about Vassar playing it that night. And then as soon as they'd get done, Blake would come in blasting in E minor with his guitar on the Vamp in the Middle song. And so between the Bluegrass Alliance doing One Tin Soldier and some of our other anti-war songs, and the Aerial Plane Band, it sure made a mark on me. And because as we were youngsters listening to music, when we started our Newgrass Revival Band, we had a cassette tape we traveled around with a Norelco tape recorder so we could hear it in the car. And one side was John Hartford Aerial Plane Band, and Aerial Plane, the record, and the other side was Leon Russell and the Shelter People. So that's what made our band listen. And then we had another tape that had Stanley Brothers on one side and Bill Monroe on the other. So it's kind of where we came from. But that was a great thing about the Aerial Plane Band. Those guys jammed all the time. They jammed nonstop. And because that night, the set I mentioned before they played, they jammed for a couple hours, and then when they got done playing that set, I got to be part of a jam session that lasted about 3 hours with them. And they just played nonstop all the time, and obviously their love of picking did it. And but it was a great weekend. Bill Monroe, back when you first came in the entrance, used to have a barn up there, and he took us in, and we were treated to. He introduced us to his mules. Hey, that's an honored seat. Not everybody got to meet Kentucky Kate and Tennessee Tom. They're powerful mules. They're powerful. So let's do a Bill tune. That was done in the style of Bill when I first started out, and then we took it out. But not all bluegrass is fast. Drew's teaching me a tune right here. We're in G if you're playing along. Drew's going to play the evening prayer. Thank you. That's true. Any questions? I guess not. We'll play another couple before we open the floor. See, we knew it would turn into a beautiful day before we got done here.
It breaks my heart to hear your name. My friend, they also love you, my darling, and they think that I am to blame. Oh, and on I follow my darling, and I wonder where she can be. Oh, everything's with me. Can't sleep when the sun goes down. By your side is my destination. Road is clear, and that's where I'm bound. All alone, I'll follow my darling, and I wonder where she can be. All alone.
Just like we rehearsed it. Okay, this is, we'll have one more song. And we'll, but let's do, we want to do a Hartford tune. Let's do one of John's. And I used to get to sit in a privileged seat to right in front of him, watching the aeroplane band play a lot. And I think Norman Blake is totally one of the most unsung heroes of the mandolin that we've ever had. He's such a great mandolin player. And things that Norman would play, they're always right to me. They always suit the song. He plays for the song. And one of the things I just loved it, just to get to watch. I've never seen anybody do it like Blake, except me. But now we all can. Because when he played up on the hill where they do the boogie, it's like a Blake's good at making these strummy things. So up here, this note. Well, you have it up here also. So the way Norman would play that little kickoff there, it's all based around this position. So that's the same as this, but up here. Now you can have your strings ringing. It's so simple and so beautiful. Tempo. Now down in the city, it's a pity what's there. All the kids in the gutter running really bare. How much money do I have to get to get me set where the jet set gets? Right up on the hill, do the boogie. In the alley and the roach on the floor, bed and men hunting for a two-bit whore. What I heard some housewife say, gotta go up the hill for the PTA. Meets up on the hill when they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they do when they do the boogie, and I wonder what they do when they do the folks say that a hippie won't steal. I caught three in my cornfield. One had a flag and the other had a bomb. And the third old boy was a getting on home. Way up on the hill when they do the boogie. The boogie, and I wonder what they're doing. Do the boogie, and I wonder what they're doing here. Coming at me on the TV screen. Every time they do it, well, it gives me a thrill. And they always seem to do it way up on the hill. Way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. We'll be right back. Okay, now. Do I know any songs about Indiana? There are songs about Indiana? I barely know one about Kentucky. I've played on songs. I just don't happen to know the words any. Sorry.
You've played with Lyle Lovett on a song he wrote about Indiana, but I don't think we know.
I know the chorus.
You know it, don't you?
Yeah. Only the chorus.
He does know one. Only part of one.
Check, please. We don't have to keep the questions confined to music, but whoever asked what's going on with the Cardinal defense, I don't know. I'll have to put a glove on and do something about it. Yes, sir. Okay, I've heard different versions of this story, so I'll tell you the one that Blake and Hartford told me, which should be the real one. This mandolin that I now call Hoss, Norman Blake owned it when they did the during the period after Aeroplane, when he and John were a two-piece band, and so they went up to record the Morning Bugle album, and Dave Holland played bass on it with them. Well, so, and this mandolin was made in 1938, and when they whoever did the work on this at the Gibson factory was either drunk or still hungover, or you know, and I think it was probably a factory second. It's really a crazy mandolin, but Blake bought it, and as he would be inclined to do, if it didn't sound quite to suit him, he'd figure out why and see what he could do about it. So, he figured out what he had to do was get the great luthier, Randy Wood, to take the back off of it and shave the braces and make the top a little. And then, in Norman's own words, later he did his own hippie handiwork, sanding on it with, you know, unmeasured sanding, just random sanding. And so it's kind of busted a few times from the random sanding being a little too thin. But as the story goes, he and Hartford hated the finish on this mandolin, and it didn't look like this. This is a varnished one that was later done. It was very thick, and you couldn't even see that grain of the wood through the finish. It was very, very, very thick. So Norman didn't like it. So he and John one night, they decided, let's take all the finish off that mandolin. Now, I read an account where they said they did it in a car. They told me it was in a hotel room. So it doesn't matter where they did it. They did it. And I heard this tape once, a portion of the tape, because John had a great radio announcing voice. And so he was the sportscaster, narrating Norman Blake taking the finish off this mandolin with a pocket knife. Now we're going down. And I just remember he said, now we're going down by the treble F hole. Let's go in for a close-up. And you can hear Blake, scrapes, scrapes, scrapes. So that's the story. They decided this mandolin's finish was terrible, and they took it off one night. And I had the good fortune to get the mandolin in January 1973, and I've had it ever since. So I really appreciate Norman Blake getting rid of this mandolin. What you think? Yes, sir. Another, then we'll play one.
A few years ago, sitting about where you were, Pete Rowland told us a story about coming to work baling hay with Bill Monroe very near here, within a few miles, is the way he talked about it. And I wonder, when you got to meet the mules, were you playing stalls? Did Mr. Monroe put you to work?
I didn't know him that well. I think you had to actually work in his band. To have to clean the stalls. We were just visitors. It was actually in that barn that day when he told us, we were the Bluegrass Alliance, and he said, I've got a song I want you guys to do. And he basically gave us the song that day called Body and Soul. He said, I want you guys to do this song. Now, he later recorded himself, but yeah, he liked us enough at the time.
You still do that one?
This would have been in 1971, so 45 years ago. It was my first Bean Blossom, yes. Now, when I was a kid, we would come up here before there was a Bean Blossom Bluegrass Festival. It was the barn that's now gone, but it would be the Brown County Jamboree. Right. And so anybody ever go to that one on Sundays? There you go. And but we would come drive up from Bowling Green, Kentucky, make a pilgrimage up to hear Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys in the afternoon performance. We even need to go back before the evening one. But that was something. And when you got to see Bill doing all the show at the Bluegrass Boys would open the show for a little while, for about a half an hour. And that's when Birch Monroe would come out and play the fiddle with them. And so the first band that I would have seen at that time, the guitar player was Pete Rowan. Not Peter, Pete Rowan. He was Pete Rowan then, or Rowans, excuse me. Yeah, he was plural. Pete Rowans, Gene Loewinger on fiddle, Don Leinberger, left-handed banjo player, and James on bass, Monroe. And then within a year, they had Lamar Greer on the banjo and Richard Green. And we just come up here and hear that band. So it's pretty great. Got to hear them. And then also we'd come to the Brown County Jamboree to hear them. With the band with Roland White on guitar and Byron Berline on fiddle and Vic Jordan on banjo. So I got to hear some pretty great Bill bands. That's pretty great stuff. What did Bill think about me when he first met me? I don't know. I mean, I was only like 13 or 14 when I met Bill, so he would let me play on the Bluegrass Boys portion, but not his. You know, I hadn't earned it yet. I couldn't play with Bill Monroe yet. I hadn't been there, and so I got to play a little bit with the Bluegrass Boys with Peter and Richard and those guys.
Did you ever get to play Bill's Lore?
I beg your pardon? Did I ever get to play Bill's Lore? Yes, but he didn't know it. Well, now let me explain. It wasn't okay. So you know, I was working with the Gibson Corporation. Charlie Darrington was the guy who repaired Bill Monroe's mandolin when it was so tragically beaten up in his house, and we thought it was destroyed. And Charlie Darrington did an incredible job restoring that mandolin. And so I happened to be at Gibson the day Bill was coming. It was finished, and I didn't. You know, and Charlie looked at me and goes, "Would you like to play Bill's mandolin?" And I said, "It's back together? It's an instrument again?" He goes, "Yeah, man." He pulled it out, and I played it a little bit, and it sounded incredible. It was so comforting to know that you might lose your great mandolin and get it back somehow with a guy like Charlie Darrington fixing it. Now, I will – okay, I got to tell on myself. Well, we were – years later when I was playing with Emmy Lou Harris – Newgrass Revival was over, so Bill was comfortable now. And now I'm in Emmy Lou's band. Everything's great. And he invited Emmy Lou and a few of us out to his house for his birthday celebration. Well, I'd never been there before, so we were in Bill Monroe's house. And if you remember Charles Sawtelle from Hot Rise, Charles was there, and Charles and I start kind of walking around Bill's house, and I mean, people were doing this, and we all of a sudden we saw his mandolin laying in a bedroom, and we go in really quietly, we opened the latches, and we just had the case opened, we were about to touch it, when up behind us comes my wife. Lynn, who gave us the, "What in the hell are you guys doing?" Charles and I jumped about 4 feet, shut the case, and got the hell out of there. So we didn't actually touch it that night. But I did get to play it once, and it was a pretty amazing thing. We weren't supposed to be in there, really. All right, let's do Bluegrass Thong. Yeah. Now Drew will explain how he did that.
Just trying to keep up best I can. Certainly a time in my life where I never thought I'd be sitting next to Sam Bush playing the mandolin. Always a treat. The key is,
there you go.
No matter how much money you spend on a mandolin, none of them stay in tune. Doesn't even matter.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Well, that's the crazy part about it, you know. But those of us that spend almost our whole life trying to play a mandolin, it's the kind of thing where if those pairs are just slightly out, it just drives us crazy. And then like an English guitar player named Ray Jackson can play the most well-known mandolin lick in the history of mandolin with his pairs kind of like this. But think about it. That is the most heard mandolin in the history of mandolin. And I love it. I love the lick. I love this thing.
More than this?
Yeah. You're probably right. Probably more than that one.
I mean, just because and I happened to do an interview once for the Mandolin Cafe, and I on the way to the interview, I happened to hear Maggie May. And I told you, I said, man, who played that? Because it didn't say on the Rod Stewart record. It said the mandolin player from Lindisfarne or something like that. It didn't say his name. So can you imagine? Hey! So I happened to say in the interview, I said, man, it's got to be the most famous mandolin solo ever. Who did it? And within a couple of days, he made contact via email. His name's Ray Jackson. So you've been a fan of Ray Jackson for 40 years. I did get to play some mandolin with Levon Helm.
We did the same night.
But it would be the most fun when he was playing drums. Just in that he's such a force on the drums. But that was, that's the great thing about mandolin. You know, Drew and I can tell you, and Steven's a great mandolin player. You hone in, you just keep trying to learn more and more, but the great part about mandolin is you can have fun with it quickly. If you've already played guitar, for sure you've already got a strum in motion going. And but that was the great thing about, say, a mandolin player like Levon Helm. You know, didn't play any bluegrass yet, he could pick up a mandolin and make it sound better than some people who've devoted 6 hours a day for 40 years on it. And why that just feels better, I think that just has something to do with his timing and how good he, same way when he drummed, but his mandolin had that same kind of right-hand percussion, and his singing had that kind of timing, too. Singing was really in time. And Doc Watson? He was good. Doc Watson, he's pretty good, yeah. Doc Watson's song. Let's do a Doc Watson song. I think this was on the first. Remember Doc's first album, the one on Vanguard with the black and white cover and the D18? Oh, that cover just got me before I heard about him, and then when I saw the album cover, I got to get that. And so I think this was on that first album. Got the blues, those Nashville blues.
I got the blues, those Nashville blues. I ain't got no hat, I ain't got no shoes.
First for Levon Helm.
Well, I'm going back to Arkansas. Going back to Arkansas. And to see my mom. And to see my pa. I got the blues, those Nashville blues. I got the blues, those Nashville blues. I ain't got no hat. I ain't got no shoes. I got the blues, those Nashville blues. I got the blues, those Nashville blues. I ain't got no hat, I ain't got no shoes.
I just learned to loop. This one Drew just did. Thank you. Yes, sir. Nothing. No, I tell you what. No, we honestly, we just got here right not long before we came up to this stage. But I would like to make mention that Mr. Stephen Mogin is quite the mentor for young bluegrass-style musicians. Stephen, can you tell them about what all you do with
them? Yeah, well, I work on the IBMA board to facilitate some things like that, and I'm also the director of bluegrass at Bethel University. We've got a couple of bluegrass bands, all students on scholarship to go out and learn how to pick and play and perfect their careers. So, yeah, pretty cool.
See, hand in the back, yes, sir.
First of all, go Cardinals.
We're friends already. Go ahead.
We all know the force that went through John's music is playing the songwriting, Mississippi River, Mississippi River Captain. Is there anything like that for you? Is there anything that drives you to playing and making the songwriting?
Not like being a steamboat captain or. No, I'm pretty simple, pretty simple-minded person. Really, I mean, music stays in my brain much to, I mean, I'll be in the middle of a conversation and realize I'm lost because I just thought about music. So sometimes it gets a little consuming. Not for me, the love of as a fan of baseball and sports. I like to sit on the couch and play along. And I actually learned that from Vassar. I knocked on his hotel room one day, and the door wasn't actually latched. I could hear him playing a fiddle in there, and I just kind of walked in quietly, and he had a football game on. He was watching football without the sound on and playing the fiddle. And when they'd huddle up, he'd go like, you know, nice long notes, you know, and then they're going to the formation. He's picking it up a little bit, and when they snap the ball, Vassar goes, it's like, and he goes into Flight of the Bumblebee for about 20 seconds, and then he goes back to. So actually, I've tried doing that. I've not with the success Vassar did, but it was pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing watching Vassar do a football soundtrack. Yes, sir. Well, probably not a lot of John's fiddling went into my mandolin playing because we were both, him as a fiddler, we're both influenced by the same people. In other words, he was good friends with, say, a guy named Texas Shorty from down Texas, Texas Shorty and Benny Thomason and Mark O'Connor. And so we all learned, I mean, John and I both were influenced basically by the same people, Benny Martin and Vassar Clements and Kenny Baker. So we were really kind of, I wasn't really influenced by John's fiddle playing. I think I was more influenced by the music he would have done with his banjo, you know, in the bands when he was playing the banjo. Yes, sir?
Did you ever write on the guitar?
I have. I mean, I've written some things on the guitar. And yeah, there's an instrumental we do called the Mahavishnu Mountain Boys that I made up on guitar. But I play fiddle better. So I play the fiddle.
We got time for
5 minutes. Hey. Well, maybe tonight, perhaps tonight. Yes, thank you. Went with the whole group. Thank you. Yes, sir, with the hand. You with the hand. 42. Cool, man. How many times have you played Telluride, Drew?
24.
We're dyslexic. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. It's weird.
I need a fresh one here. What's a good one to be?
A little bit. Well, yes. Yeah. I do. I'll try to be brief, but it's crazy because. I haven't been doing this for years, but at one point, like in the 70s, I would have dreams, and every once in a while, they would come true, like really come true. And one, I dreamt once, and I'd never seen Douglas and Rodney Dillard play together because Douglas had already quit playing with the Dillards by the time we would have met. And it was an odd dream to me at that time because I had not seen Douglas and Rodney in the same room ever, even. And I knew them both. And so I had a dream that I was playing in a studio with John Hartford on the fiddle, Rodney Dillard on guitar, Doug on banjo, me on mandolin, and a guy playing a cello for a bass smoking a Sherlock Holmes-style pipe. All right? And about 6 months later, all of a sudden I was sitting in a studio with Hartford, Dillard, and Hartford, and Jeff Gilkinson playing the cello like a bass with a Sherlock Holmes pipe, and we were sitting in exactly the same positions we were in. So that's the only time I ever played with Douglas and Rodney at the same time. That being said, I just got to play on the new album that Rodney's making, the new Dillard's album, so I just got to play on some of that. So I've kind of gotten to play with the Dillards. Thank you. We better play one more and make way.
Make room.
That's Mun. Right, and this is only a three-piece band. Boy, when you get more strings coming in, whoo, with the weather changes. We ought to endorse tuning keys is what we ought to endorse. Thanks for being here. Thank you, Drew Emmett.
Thank you, Sam Bush.
Thank you to Stephen Mojan. Stephen Mogin, Drew Emmett, thank you.
Sam Bush.
How cool was that, folks? Several more hours of these guys tonight at the main stage, so, I mean, gosh.